What We Spend is a new podcast that explores something we almost never talk about. Every week, you'll hear a different guest share everything they spend their money on. What We Spend is available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning. Welcome. It is Hardline here on News Radio 930 WBEN. We have a packed show for you today. We'll be talking with our Washington insider, Dave Leventhal, in just a few seconds. After that, we'll be talking with Buffalo mayoral candidate Garnell Whitfield, as well as Avi Israel from Save the Michaels of the World. At 11, former Congressman Chris Collins will be joining us to talk about his run to get back into Congress. And at 11:30, Carl Calabrese. So, without further intro, let's go to our first guest. It is Buffalo's own, our Washington insider, Dave Leventhal, on this Father's Day. Dave, good morning. Happy Father's Day.
Good morning and a happy Father's Day right back at you, Joe Beamer.
Dave, lots going on. Let's go back to just yesterday. And before we get to the events in D.C., we do have to comment on the tragic situation in Minnesota, where everyone all over D.C. was commenting on the violence. But we still have a suspect at large as of this morning.
Yeah, active manhunt, and still the suspect is not in custody. This has led to the death of two people, including the former House Speaker in Minnesota, and in the very tragic shooting and in serious injuries sustained by another member of the legislature there. A horrible situation, need not say. And it's something that is absolutely dominated the state and speaks to a larger issue here that we've been grappling with for many years in the United States, which is when the rhetoric and the acrimony of politics turns into something that is even beyond toxic to violent. And there's extremism and strains of extremism, Joe, in this country that, of course, have led to this. And this has resulted in the shootings or attempted killings or the actual killings of more lawmakers than you could almost ever imagine. We're almost forgetting situations over the past several years where lawmakers have been gravely wounded or killed as a result of this very type of activity. So, you know, you ponder it, you wonder, well, what could be done otherwise? Is this just a need for turning the temperature down in this country? Is this a mental health issue? Is it all of the above? And at least this particular situation, it seems to be a directly targeted operation of one by a person who allegedly had a hit list and something that it seems like he's going after other people and other members of that legislature. Just absolutely chilling.
You know, Dave, you talk about that, you know, bringing the temperature down. We heard that so much a year ago after the shooting at the Trump rally where President Trump was shot and someone was killed. You and I talked about that the day after that happened. And, you know, you had that for like a week and then it's back to, everything was ramped up on both sides. What's the feeling in Washington after this tragic event?
Well, the feeling is shock, but also to not necessarily surprise because of everything that we just laid out. And look, 999 out of 1,000 people can be very angry at their political opponents, and they can, of course, be very upset about the way that this country may be going one way or another, and they will never act violently. But then you get that one person, and maybe it's 999 out of 1,000, 9,999 out of 10,000. But if you just have that one person who takes it to another level, then you have situations like the one that we have right now where it results in grave injuries or death. And do we want to live in a country like that? So, I think everyone just needs to look in the mirror and say, am I contributing to a culture of fear and a culture that in essence is promoting violence or something where I'm not seeing my political opponent as my mortal enemy? And everyone can play a role, at least in that respect, even if, of course, for themselves, they would never actually do something such as this.
Exactly. That going on yesterday, obviously, the manhunt still going on today. And in Washington, D.C., we had the parade for the 250th anniversary of the U.S. Army. Mr. Dave Leventhal, you were there. Take us through it.
I sure was. Look, I've been to a lot of parades, including in Buffalo and throughout my young life. And I have been to Christmas parades and Halloween parades, Italian, Irish, gay, fascist, Falun Gong parades. I mean, the list goes on and on and on, many times covering them journalistically. But I have never quite seen a parade like this. And I think many people who attended would feel the same way for reasons that may seem positive and reasons that may seem negative. I spend much of the parade talking to people about, pardon me, why they were there. And sure, there were a lot of people who were there to support Donald Trump. It was his birthday. And of course, that was not lost on anyone that the Army's 250th anniversary was being celebrated on a day when Donald Trump was celebrating his 79th birthday. And so, you know, it was pretty difficult to unravel and decouple those two things happening at the same time. There were some shout outs to Donald Trump, wishing him a happy birthday during the proceedings. But I got to say, this was not a really wild, crazy Trump rally like affair. I spent much of the time at the front in the middle of the parade. It really wasn't that well populated. Sometimes there were gaps in the fence line along Connecticut or along Constitution Avenue between some of the streets leading to the front of the parade. It was definitely more animated and well populated toward the end of the route where Donald Trump's viewing stand was. But I would say that for most of the parade, it was pretty subdued, relatively quiet, and definitely respectful. There were really no, at least that I observed, instances of great acrimony or people fighting or any need for the many, many, many police officers and law enforcement officials who were there protecting the parade to jump in or otherwise break up situations that would have been untoward. But definitely was a spectacle, and many of those people who I did talk to were just there for the spectacle. Not to get too Freudian on you, but for them, a parade was just a parade, and this was not anything that spoke to some deeper situation with Donald Trump or the militarization of our country or autocracy, which was many of the criticisms, of course, that were being levied at the president and his administration through the thousands of protests that were simultaneously going on the quote unquote No King's Day protests that were happening again all over the country and collectively were much more well attended than the parade itself here in D.C.
The No Kings protest, that was the next thing I wanted to bring up. As you said, going on all across the country, we had multiple demonstrations here in Western New York. Did those clash with the parade? Was the No Kings protest going on the same time in D.C.?
No, they really weren't. Now, there were some scattered protesters at the parade. Most of them were very quiet. They held signs. They walked around, but they were definitely in the minority. The No Kings protest, at least the organizers of that, didn't actually have any formal activity here in Washington, D.C. There were protests in and around the city, but not of the sort that you saw in Philadelphia or California or Texas or other places around the country. And part of that, at least the organizer said, was out of respect for the U.S. military. And their argument was, hey, we don't have any quarrel with the military. They should have their due. And the soldiers and the troops who were honored and were there en masse, literally thousands. I mean, it was quite a spectacle. Tanks rolling down Constitution Avenue, military personnel, all the vehicles, planes in the air, World War II vintage aircraft, helicopters. It was all very much a sight, and they didn't want to figuratively rain on the parade. And I should note, too, that even though storms were in the forecast, we only got a few sprinkles during the parade itself, so that the weather did hold off.
Now, overseas, Israel and Iran have been trading missile launches, and you know, this has been taken over. I said, Dave, all week it was either the protests in L.A. or the Middle East Israel-Iran conflict. I was staying up past midnight because the news networks were going late into the night. But how is this being viewed from Washington, D.C.?
Obviously, a frightening situation all around, and worries that this is going to spill out beyond the borders of Iran and Israel. And it's already plenty bad, just given what it is at this moment. You wonder if there's going to be a third country or a fourth country that gets wrapped into this or chooses to get into it. That remains to be seen. No indications that that will be the case. But it was striking to see President Trump and Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth and the secretaries of the Navy and the Army and other top military officials up there on the risers while bombs and missiles were flying between those two countries. Some of the detractors of the Trump administration said, well, shouldn't they be at work right now and dealing with this, just given the United States' indirect involvement in all of this? The United States, I should note, is providing at least defense cover for Israel to some extent, even if it's, of course, not getting involved in the offensive operations. But the pictures speak for themselves. Neighborhoods in Israel that have been partially leveled by missiles that are flying into its territory at the same time when Israel is just devastating different types of military and other types of logistical, like oil fields operations in Iran. It's really just a scary situation, not only, again, because of what it is, but because of the potential for further escalation that could very much imperil the entire Middle East.
And definitely something we're all keeping our eyes on. Back here at home, Dave, the big, beautiful bill. I think I went all week without hearing about the big, beautiful bill. Where does it stand?
Yeah, you know, when you have everything that we just discussed in motion in the way that it is, some things get pushed aside, which is just remarkable. The big, beautiful bill is still going forward, but you still, Joe, have several U.S. senators on the Republican side who are very concerned about what is in the big, beautiful bill, who would like to make it a little smaller than perhaps it is right now. And that's really the criticism from the right about this bill, is that it's too big and that it's going to be too costly. And that's people such as Senator Rand Paul from Kentucky. It's people like Senator Ron Johnson from Wisconsin. These are Trump supporters. These are people who are full on MAGA, and they just have concerns from a financial standpoint. And then you have other senators like Josh Hawley saying, well, this is going to be a real problem for us just in terms of the social impact even. I mean, one of the most conservative members of Congress, he also too has grave budget concerns. Lisa Murkowski from Alaska, Susan Collins from Maine. Why do I tick all their names off? Well, Republicans can only lose three votes here, okay, on the Republican side. And if they lose those three or more, then this suddenly gets imperiled. So there's going to have to be some wheeling and dealing done. There's going to have to be likely some compromise made. There's a deadline of going into next month. That is a self-imposed deadline for this bill. But also, too, after the Senate passes it, if they do, they got to go back to the House and they got to iron out the details. So, yes, even though we haven't had this in the headlines in the way that we did the week before, the week before that, it is still very much there. It is not going away. It must be dealt with if Donald Trump wants to have his agenda funded. And he can sign all of the executive orders in the world, but if he doesn't have financial might behind them, then he's not going to get everything that he wants out of his agenda, not even close, which is why we're talking about this bill all the time and in the fashion that we are in the first place, because it really all comes down to money, Joe, and this is where the money is in this bill.
Did I see correctly, maybe I didn't, that there were people pushing back and that the tax on tips or the no tax on tips is in danger of being dropped?
It could be. And this is something that Donald Trump, he absolutely loves. The story, if you believe it to be true, it may or may not be apocryphal, is that this came to him in a conversation that he had with a waitress in Las Vegas while he was running for the presidency. And he sees this as a huge win, something that will be very attractive for people who are just, you know, workaday folks who work in restaurants or other jobs where tips are such a big deal and such a huge part of their income. And if you don't tax tips, well, that's a whole lot more money in their pockets. But at the same time, too, it's something that could be very, very costly to fund. And if you're not getting the tax revenue from that money flowing in to governments, then, well, okay, where are you going to find it? And that's some of the big questions. Do you take that from the social safety net? Do you take that from healthcare? Do you take it from here or there? So These are the types of questions that are being debated, and also the questions that some members of Congress on the Republican side, we know how the Democrats feel about this, but some Republicans feel are just a little too much for this bill, and that the more you cut in terms of money flowing in, the more you've got to cut from money that is flowing out, and people who might be benefiting greatly from that money that's flowing out from the government, including people who are sick or elderly or who have need help in this country. Their programs are not going to be funded in a way that could very, 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 very seriously harm them. And that's the concern.
You mentioned Senator Josh Hawley, and I actually talked about him on one of my opinion shows this week. Yeah. He is getting behind a bill that will raise the federal minimum wage, which is kind of stepping away from the policy usually associated with the Republicans.
He is, and this is something that's not particularly popular among Republicans outside of Josh Hawley, something that Democrats have been agitating for a little while, but haven't really done anything on when they've had their chance in power, so that's very much worth noting. But the federal minimum wage has basically stayed the same that it's been for a generation, $7.25. And even though many states such as New York and here in D.C., the federal minimum wage is no reflection of the actual minimum wage that can be locally changed and increased. Sometimes it's double what it is at the federal level. There are still some major large states and other states across the country that do adhere to that federal minimum wage. So, nobody thinks that making $7 an hour roughly is going to allow you to pay your bills in this day and age. And people who are freaking out about inflation and all of that, well, your money is worth about half of what it is, if a dollar, than it would have been a generation ago. So that $7.25 doesn't go nearly as far as it used to when that level was set. So that's kind of Josh Hawley's argument, is that, look, we've got to adhere to reality here and help people who are just simply not able to make ends meet. It's not a living wage. It's a poverty wage. And I paraphrase him. And that's a bit of an argument that he's pushing it right now. Whether anyone listens to him is another matter, but he's definitely using his bully pulpit to raise that issue among others.
Dave, I'm sure I've asked you this question, and I know I'll ask you again before November, but obviously it's an odd year election, a lot of local elections going on. Buffalo has an election where, for the first time since my junior year in high school, Byron Brown won't appear on the ballot. Actually, whatever the election before that was, because he was elected my junior year of high school. So we know that's the big deal here in Buffalo. But nationwide, is there any elections that people in Washington are keeping an eye on?
Yeah, one and one very close by, which is the governor of Virginia. And this is something where the lieutenant governor, Winsome Earl Sears, who's a Republican, and Abigail Spanberger, former congresswoman, who is the Democrat, are running in what we expect to be one of the most high-profile races in the country. And Virginia, why is it worth looking at Virginia? Well, Virginia is a legit purple state. It leans maybe a little bit more blue than red, but the current governor of Virginia is a Democrat. The two U.S. senators are Republicans. It's a state that did go Democrat in the presidential election, but could have very well gone Republican. And so for that reason, it is considered very much to be a bellwether state, where the result has larger, deeper, more far-reaching implications than just the individual race itself. So keep an eye on that one. Abigail Spanberger, if you believe the polls, is leading at this point, but I expect that it's going to be number one, very competitive, and number two, very expensive, where there is going to be not only national interest just from a curiosity standpoint, but most definitely from a financial standpoint.
Interesting. And that was the election Glenn Youngkin kind of won by taking the opposite approach when it came to schools against Terry McAuliffe, correct?
Absolutely. And he's been the governor, and he can't serve because in Virginia, you can't serve terms back to back. You have to take basically a break. And if you want to run again, you can do that. So it's a little bit of a twist in the way that governors can serve in that state versus New York and many others where you can serve for as long as you want. So you oftentimes get a lot of action that is going on in Virginia at the governor's level as opposed to many other states in the country.
I've said, Dave, I think that's what they should do with president. I think the president should have to do a term, and if you want to get back, you have to sit a term out so you're not campaigning the entire time you're in the White House.
And a lot of states, they have considered all sorts of different ways. My first job at Syracuse University was covering the state of New Hampshire, where they have gubernatorial elections every 2 years, not every 4 years. You can serve forever, but you got to run basically on a two-year schedule. So that's something where you constantly have to make sure that you are being very responsive to the people. A lot of people would argue too responsive, but yeah, you know, lots of different philosophies for how things should go at the governor's level.
All right, Dave, final question for you. Chris Collins, we're going to be hearing from him at 11 o'clock. He was obviously the congressman here in NY27, which doesn't exist anymore. He was the first member of Congress to endorse Donald Trump. It all came crashing down, as he writes about in his new book. He is looking to go back to Congress, though this time in Florida 19. What are your thoughts on Chris Collins trying to head back to Congress?
Well, yeah, hey, plenty of Buffalonians and Western New Yorkers who have a part-time home in Florida, so at least it doesn't seem too out of left field. He's not running for Congress in Idaho or Colorado or something, but I mean, why not for him? He's on his redemption tour. He served 2 months in federal prison until Donald Trump pardoned him and basically let him off the hook, and he's trying to make his comeback here. So despite the fact that he said at the time that, look, I screwed up, I say uncle, I broke the law, he's looking to come back. And who better than to draw inspiration from on a political comeback tour of this sort than the president himself? You know, this is an age when you can be convicted of 34 felony counts and become president of the United States. So Chris Collins, he's got a compelling story to tell, he believes, and it may be attractive in a race where it could be pretty there for him to take if he runs a good campaign. So we'll see ultimately what happens. There are definitely a few examples of folks who have served in two different states and different portions of the government. I think of Mitt Romney, most prominently, the governor of Massachusetts, and then a senator from Utah. So this is not without precedent, and it definitely can happen.
That would have been a good one to remember when I did the interview, Dave. Hey, always appreciate your time, Dave Leventhal, especially on Father's Day. Happy Father's Day to you, and we'll talk soon.
Yeah, absolutely. And happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there.
And that is Dave Leventhal. You hear him every Tuesday morning with Susan and Brian at 6:50 here on News Radio 930 WBEN. When we come back, we'll be talking with Buffalo mayoral candidate Garnell Whitfield. It's Hardline on News Radio 930 WBEN.
You know how you always want to know about everyone else's money? On the podcast What We Spend, guests will, for 1 week, tell us everything they spend their money on.
My son slammed $6 worth of blueberries in 5 minutes.
And everything that makes them feel.
I want to own a house. I want to have a child. But this morning, I really wanted a coffee.
Because at the end of the day, money is always about more than your balance. Listen to and follow What We Spend, an Odyssey original podcast. Available now wherever you get your podcasts.